It's like a marriage. At the honeymoon phase, what do you do to build that relationship with your wife or husband? Same thing. Once you get into bed with a retailer, what do you do to keep that burning love live? You gotta find ways to grow the business.
Welcome to the B2B Breakthrough Podcast. We're here to bring you all the best knowledge, insights, and strategies from e-commerce experts, successful business owners, and the team at Alibaba.com that you'll need to grow your business and achieve your next big breakthrough. I'm your host, Sierra Cristo. On today's episode of the B2B Breakthrough Podcast, we're joined by Johan Jacob, founder and president of RetailBound. With over 30 years of retail experience and a track record of mentoring more than 4,000 clients worldwide, Johan has seen it all. From navigating the consumer electronics world to helping brands build winning retail strategies, his insights are a masterclass in staying ahead in a constantly shifting industry. Johan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We're really happy to have you. We have so much we want to get into. We've spoken with a lot of entrepreneurs in the past about their strategies, taking their products and their inventions into a retail space. And we kind of want to break down what those strategies look like from your perspective and as you've worked with clients. Before we get into the nitty-gritty here, just lay a quick foundation for us on what RetailBound is and how it helps the entrepreneurial community.
So RetailBound, we're a full-service retail solutions agency, around 17 plus years, and our job is to help young brands have the time or experience, not just launch in retail, but stay and grow in retail. A lot of our clients are innovative product brands that have cool tech, but just need a little help. And that's why our company was founded in 2008 to help these brands get the extra leg over their competition, by the way.
Before we break it down tactically, can you just lay a very basic beginner foundation on how it looks to have a conversation with a retail buyer and how to even get your foot in the door before we start talking about what you need to have prepared?
Great question. So before you talk to a buyer, you have to be ready for retail. That's the main, from having a 3PL and a logistics strategy already baked to having finished retail packaging, pricing, marketing strategy, all those kind of things necessary. Because I always tell potential clients, like a job interview, right, there's one job opening in 20 applicants, there's one slot on the shelf, and there's 20 great brands, right? And like a job interview, we, the buyer, can tell which brands are ready to work with them and which aren't. The ones aren't waste their time, waste the buyer's time, and don't get a second chance at making a first impression. So before you pick up the phone, before you send an email, before you exhibit at a trade show, it's really important you have those things necessary in place, from the logistics, marketing, retail packaging, and so forth, before you actually talk to a buyer and say, hey, I'd love to work at Best Buy or Apple or Costco. There's something you need to get done before you talk to those retail buyers, by the way.
Cool. And to get those conversations started, that you mentioned email, phone call, trade shows, this is where we're finding them. We're cold calling, we're showing up at local trade shows, national trade shows. That's how you get in front of these people?
If you didn't have a company like RetailBound, right, that has relationships, or you're using a broker or distributor, yes, the methods would be cold emails, it'd be trade shows, it'd be networking, like LinkedIn, right? But those are the things that most brands use. It didn't have a reach like RetailBound in their corner helping them out.
So it's a lot of hustling to even start these conversations and find out how to get in the right places.
It is tough. I mean, retail buyers, they get hundreds and hundreds of unsolicited applications to be a vendor of record. Honestly, they can't talk to every Tom, Dick, and Harry, so they have to be selective on who they can work with. And if they do get a meeting or a phone call to a buyer, you got to be prepared, not just to sell the retailer. It's like a marriage. At the honeymoon phase, what do you do to build that relationship with your wife or husband, right? Same thing. Once you get into the bed with a retailer like Best Buy, again, what do you do to keep that burning love live, right? You got to find ways to grow the business, because in the beginning, Best Buy is very busy, right? So they rely on you to drive the traffic, you to ship the product, you do X, Y, Z, right? And then once business is rock and roll, and then Best Buy will reciprocate and help grow your business on their shelves, or on their website.
Cool. That's when you can get into performance analysis and understand who your audience is when they're buying from the retailer perspective.
That's correct.
Cool. So let's get into those steps to prepare. You mentioned starting with product differentiation. So why is that such a crucial stage in preparing for a conversation with a retail buyer?
It's very important because honestly, if you're the same product like the other 20 products he has on your shelf, why should I pick you? If you have an iPhone case, another Bluetooth speaker, another massage gun, these are all great products, but they are very saturated categories. If a buyer has 20 of these on the shelf, why should I pick you? those things that you want to have already predetermined or laid out before you actually, again, knock on that door with that retail buyer. For products that are more unique, and that's where we kind of to focus on products that are less saturated, more like first to market, which I'll again explain on this call today. Those have a little easier time of talking to a retail buyer because there aren't 40 XYZs. They're the only one in their space because brand new. We're a brand that has massage guns or iPhone case. It's very tough to stand because, again, it's hard for a buyer to change, especially in store. Hey, I have 20 iPhone cases and I'm going to change out one for another unless there's a major issue. Like says there's a service and supply issue. There are 3PL or logistics. I have an issue of shipping products on the right time. Their costs are going up. They're not doing the marketing to drive traffic. That's the primary reason why a retail buyer would cut or fire an existing supplier in a saturated space like iPhone cases or massage guns. So again, if you're going to get in, if you're in that kind of space, you're going to have a really compelling story why you're better than the other 40 brands that he already has on their shelf or their website.
And so it's about optimizing and improving along the way as well to stay relevant for those buyers.
That's correct. In any day, I do a lot of these podcasts and webinars and seminars, and there's really one secret in being successful in retail. And it's pretty simple, but a lot of people have a hard time executing it. It's basically making the buyer look good, making the job easier. See, it's common sense stuff, but a lot of young brands, or brands in general, not young, but brands in general, forget that, such as providing timely communication, where it's by email or by phone, right? Hey, if there's a cost increase, there's a product delay, I need to know, right? Or if I need a sample shipped at a certain time, right? There are certain things that buyers get irritated about. And the biggest thing is that a lot of their brands make the job harder. And those brands that make the job harder, probably are not going to make next year's assortment.
Interesting. So do you have an example that you can share with us of a brand that was able to cut through a saturated market really nicely in this differentiation conversation?
So we have a client or a past client, we just ended with them literally last month. They were for about 3.5 years. One of the products they made was a product called the Bloom, which is basically an indoor air purifier. Now in 2020, air purifiers basically grew because people were at home, right? And indoor air can be up to 5 times more worse than outdoor air. So to stand out from a crowd market of air purifiers, they actually made an air purifier that doubled as a planter. They also, for Costco, because we did a bundle for Costco, they also made a tabletop, like a nightstand. So maybe more of a multi-use product than just an air purifier. Here's a product that, in a saturated category, air purifiers, but by a different way around that commoditized or saturated product space, by the way. So whether it looks like a piece of furniture, a piece of art, right? So yes, they did a nice job of incorporating, like whether it's a nightstand or a planter in their existing product, by the way.
So variety in one cohesive brand, a line of products is also helpful to differentiate.
Yeah, and definitely buyers like, this is kind of cool. I might see a lot of these air purifier, but here's something that's unique.
Sure.
Different. And those are the reasons why the buyers like, hey, yeah, let's give it a shot because they're willing to do what it takes to make the buyer's job look easier.
Yeah, you got to make them look good.
I mean, look good. You name them good, they get promoted. They get promoted. They'll remember the ones that kind of wash their back. They'll wash their back later on.
I like it. So as we're talking about these buyers and the expectations that they have, I think that helps us transition into the next big tip here to be successful in retail. So can you talk to us a little bit more about the buyer expectations?
So buyers overall, I would say that they look at products, right? They look at a couple of things. One, they look at market trends. Also, air purifiers, not a growth category. It was back in 2020. It's probably more of a flat or stagnant category. But what are categories that are hot, that are growing? They look at financial budgets. Just like you and I, we have a budget, right? I can't keep spending if I don't have the money in my bank, right? So they have a budget in mind. Store policies. There are maybe certain products that are out to display in store or online based on policies, right? So these are things they look at generally speaking, right? Does your product hit a market trend? Can they afford to have it in their stores? Are there certain store policies that restrict? Honestly, retail, give or take, especially as it gets competitive, especially the last couple of years in retail, a buyer decision-making process is, will your product hit all three criteria? One, will your product drive top-line sales growth? Two, will it drive bottom line profits? Because in the day, that's how I pay the bills. And three, and it's really important, will your product sell through what we call inventory turns? Basically, if I buy 100 pieces on day one, and I don't replenish that till day 100, probably not good. I buy a product on day one and I replenish on day 10, day 30, not bad. And I keep doing it. So you want to make sure the product is selling through and just sitting there on the shelf hunting dust.
Interesting. So it's the sales growth, the profitability, and the turnover and the replenishment rate.
That's correct.
Really interesting. Now, as you're working with these retail buyers in this conversation, how much negotiation goes into this? Is it more of a very clear cut, this is what I'm willing to buy, sure, let's go through with it? Or is there more of a push and pull and room for negotiation as you get into this?
So depending on the retailer and the category, there is a negotiation. That's what buyers decide, hey, here's my cost, Best Buy, take it or leave it. Obviously, if you're a newbie, right, it's probably very, very challenging. I had a call with a brand literally a couple of days ago who was interested in our services. They're already starting to talk to retailers, and they actually got an opportunity to work with Chewy.com, another great retailer, right? And that's awesome. And I said, well, tell me about the program you agreed for already without me learning about. Well, it's dropship. Okay, that's fine. What are the terms? Is it probably, you know, like 30 days or less? No, it's 90 days. What? So if I sell one dog bone, you don't get paid for 90 days, who would sign that? We did. Who pays for freight? We do. What about marketing? We got to do that too as well. So again, a lot of entrepreneurs I work with think they're master negotiators. They're the Mark Cubans, the Donald Trumps of the world. And maybe they are. But if you've never been a buyer, never been in their shoes, it's very tough to understand what tricks or what various buyers use to negotiate small brands like the one I just mentioned the last 5 minutes, by the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's important to have a partner like you in their corner then to vet these contracts and make sure that everyone is coming out of this a winner.
Yeah. And same way, buyers like us in the between, because they don't have time to talk to every Tom they can hear, as I mentioned. They only bring the best of the best. They know that we as four large buyers have already done the hard work of vetting out these brands by making sure they have the right go-market strategy.
Yeah. Damn. Okay, cool. There's so much more nuance in the negotiation phase, in the contracting phase, that I've never experienced it. I've never gone through it personally. So it's hard to know, especially if you're a first-time entrepreneur trying to figure out the ropes here. It's a lot to consider and some things that I wouldn't have been prepared to have in my back pocket, especially trying to be accommodating to a certain extent, knowing that I want to get my product in front of people. You may be willing to take less than you probably should to just get that exposure in the first place. And that's not always the sustainable way through.
There are certain things that maybe you could do. Great. Are things like you shouldn't do? Outsource it. Like, again, can I pay my house? Probably could. But do I have the skill or the patience? Probably not. That's why I outsource someone needed to pay my house, because I don't have the time or the patience to up and down, left and right, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I would say that a lot of our clients, they think they are master negotiators. And I think there's a lot of emotion when you're trying to negotiate again. It's your baby, right? Your brand. You spent blood, sweat, tears. Right? And when the buyer says, cost is too high, I don't like your product, it's not what I'm looking for, you take it personally. So having a neutral third party like Reachabound that's been on actually both sides of the desk. That's one of our unique, our teammates, our consultants like myself, we're large retail buyers. We're also even manufacturers who've actually sold to retailers. So it makes it a little different that we've been in your shoes as a young brand trying to pioneer into retail, but we also been in the shoes of your customer, the large retail buyer that sees a lot of brands try to sell them their product.
Now, you mentioned the manufacturing side of this and being prepared to meet those profit margins. Part of that is making sure that your supply chain is outfitted to accommodate those demands. So tell me a little bit about your third tenet here on making sure that your supply chain is prepared for this conversation.
So a lot of our clients, you know, make their product overseas. Very few products are made here in the U.S., obviously, right? So having a partner like Alibaba or a partner that can ship goods on a timely manner is very important, because now, if products arrive late to a retailer's warehouse, you get charged. They're called penalty charges, or what I call punk chargers, right? So it's very important that you have a partner where it's a 3PL, a distributor, or any type of logistics agent to get products to the right retailer at the right time, right? At the right cost, right? And if you don't do that, it's going to cost you. And I see a lot of brands in the beginning, because they're starting up, they have a lot of excess funds, to find the cheapest solution. Just because they're the cheapest doesn't mean they're the best. And there have been times where we come on board and actually have to fire our client existing 3PL or logistics partner, because at the end of the day, if it's not shipping on the right time, right place, yeah, the brand gets slapped in the hand by the retailer, but I'm the one who gets yelled at because I'm in between the brand and the retailer. So since my relationship, my stamp of approval, you do a good job of vetting out the good and the bad when it comes to logistics. But again, it's a relationship with the right barcode label, pack and slip, it's short shipped, right? It's not 20 pieces, it's 19 pieces. Ship the wrong warehouse, those are things that get caused issues with retailers, and they will definitely penalize the brand for making those mistakes. It's the brand that chose that 3PL or logistics partner, by the way.
So it's making sure that you're vetting your partners thoroughly to make sure that they have the track record to efficiently ship your products and do it on time. Now, can you take us back to logistics 101 for a second here? Again, for the beginners, can you break down what a 3PL is and how to identify the right partners that actually help you get over the finish line here?
Sure. So a 3PL is called third-party logistics. It could be a warehouse, it could be one warehouse or multiple warehouses. The purpose of a 3PL is to basically stock your product and fulfill it on demand. There are two types of 3PLs. One is really that does more D2C, and there's plenty. Ship Bob, Ship Monk, Ship This, Ship There. There's plenty of them out there, right? Then there are, I call 3PLs that do more B2B. So instead of drop shipping when you choose these, they're shipping case packs. And then next is a third one called a 3PL Plus. A 3PL Plus combines the fulfillment and logistics or fulfillment and warehousing that a normal 3PL would, B2C or B2B, but the plus includes other things. It could be kitting, doing bundles, right? So maybe you have product A and product B separate, and it's going to be drop shipped to a consumer. They can put it in one box, and it's a bundle. It's a soft bundle online, but they'll could put two sort of products in a box. They could have point-of-purchase displays. Maybe they actually create mortgage shippers. And then pre-fill it and ship it to a retailer. Another plus could be having EDI. EDI is basically a electronic data interchange or way how large retailers can transmit purchase orders to a manufacturer. And other nice things is they can be a distributor. They may have some vendor codes or vendor numbers with a Target, a QVC, or a Walmart. So let me say they're a quasi-distributor, right? So when we're evaluating 3PL, B2B, or 3PL Plus includes the DISTI, right? Again, like I said before, we look at those criteria. What's the cost? What's the reliability? And is there any flexibility if there's a urgent DEFCON 6 request from a retail buyer?
Cool. That's really helpful. I think knowing what kind of logistics strategy, logistics services will best suit your business is so crucial. And there's so much more in that plus category than meets the eye at a first glance as you try to evaluate what makes the most sense.
And there's times where our clients, thanks to our help, we've grown their sales as we expand our retailers. And that 3PL they hired maybe a year ago or 3 years ago isn't situated or set up to handle those growing. So now it's time to maybe look at a bigger 3PL that can handle our clients' needs and certain wants.
Very cool. Growth is always good. We love that.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Double-edged sword, but the longer we're growing the business, we can find other ways to maintain that growth.
Is the complexity of sourcing holding you back? Are you getting overwhelmed by information in an endless search? Now sourcing for your business has never been easier. Meet Axio, the world's first AI sourcing engine that helps you source like a pro with 5 key features. You'll get product inspiration that leverages real-time market data from comprehensive web insights, social media trends, and B2B knowledge. Generate detailed requirements to find the perfect match from AI-verified products and suppliers through Axio's multimodal search. Use Super Comparison to easily discover and compare millions of products from leading suppliers, focusing on the best-selling and most competitive options. With Axio Page, you'll get AI-generated encyclopedia pages that compile verified product information for each SKU. And finally, leverage Axio Agent to streamline negotiations with conversation guidance, real-time summaries, and direct answers about products and suppliers without having to browse detail pages. Head over to axio.ai today. That's ACCIO.AI to try Axio for free and start sourcing like a pro. Now, I want to transition into number 4 here, because having all the back end stuff is great, is absolutely necessary, but making sure that you have that comprehensive marketing plan to make your product attractive to the buyer is massive. So tell us a little bit about the importance of that in these conversations with buyers.
So, you know, marketing is very important, right? Marketing can be for many different things. And I say marketing, I'm like digital ads and paid search. Those are things that are hopefully more nice to have. When I say marketing, could be promotions, probably the biggest thing, right? Where, okay, was $199 on sale for $149, say $50. I'm a big fan of not promoting often because it does a couple of things. One, it devalues your brand. You make less money from a gross profit. And third, you're training customers to wait. There's a deal. I have a client that I think after a year of going back and forth, they were on sale in 2024. This is not a joke. On their own website, which affects retail, by the way, but they were on sale for 317 days of the year. That's nuts.
That's a long sale.
That's a long sale. Well, maybe this week it's, say, 15%. Next week it's buy one, get one. Next one is whatever, right? You're basically competing against yourself on Best Buy and Apple and Target. So, you know, if you're going to do a promotion at key times like back to school or Black Friday, you want to make sure all your retail partners are on the same level playing field. If one retailer, Amazon or Best Buy or Yoan.com, is below the market, now you cause what we call a channel conflict. And that's not good for both the retailer as well as consumers like you and I. But promotions are probably the most basic for marketing that our clients participate in, a key time here to build awareness and drive sales. Other things that are more, I call more nice to have, not required, but it's nice to have, in-store education, where it's in-store demo events, if requests are allowed, point of purchase displays, because you can't rely on a sales associate all the time because they're busy. So having a display where it's an acrylic display or one with a video that kind of explains. So for example, I was traveling from CES 2 weeks ago, and when I arrived in Chicago O'Hare Airport and then walking towards the baggage pickup, I stopped by a Brookstone Airport store. There was one of our clients, a client called Ultra Human, which makes a smart ring. And they had, in that Brook Airport store, a display. So now you actually can see what size am I? Am I a size 9? Am I a size 8? Or am I a size 10? And then also that inventory you could grab and try it out and demo, right? But having displays is a great way to sell product, right? A lot of the major retailers have called a cafeteria menu of marketing levers, where it's offline or online. So online could be paid reviews, paid search, banner ads, email blasts, special sales events, right? Those are things that you can invest in, or some may be free, depending on the buyer and the retailer. But if those are the things that we ask our clients to participate, because if you don't do that, you're not going to last very long on the shelf.
Interesting. So it's the elevator pitch for your product that you need beyond getting onto the shelf. You need it to make sure that it's clear and concise in all of your messaging, whether it's a physical display in the store or talking to sales associates to make sure that all of the humans in the store are able to communicate this point as effectively to your audience as you can online.
As well as the copy that you have on the retailer's website to the retail box itself. You need to be consistent. I've seen hotspots where the website doesn't match the box, doesn't match the sign, and then the sales associate is confused. So make sure your marketing and brand strategy are the same and all, depending on what the platform could be.
That's a really good point, making sure that it's consistent from location to location.
Correct.
And part of that is in the retail packaging itself, that as we were talking about the three PLs who are making sure that you've got the in-store displays and the marketing, it all comes together with the packaging. So how can you make sure that your retail-ready packaging strategy is exactly where it needs to be to compete in these shelves, in these saturated markets?
I'm going to answer your question two ways.
Please do.
Because I think, because not just retail packaging, it's also the packaging, how you ship to the retailer or the 3PL is just as important. So let's talk about how you ship to a retailer or distributor or warehouse. Some of our clients, when we first meet, like, I say, what's your case pack? Well, the problem is that in retail, every time the Best Buy's warehouse has to open a box and count 4 units to be shipped out to that one store in Chicago, it actually costs the buyer money that someone's actually had to count. If you know that on a Best Buy shelf, that they could fit 3 units on the shelf and maybe have 1 unit in the back stock room for replenishment, that's 4. All right. So maybe your inner case pack should be 4. Maybe your mesh case pack should be 24. So you have 6 cases of 4 each. Now when Best Buy needs to replenish, the logistic person at Best Buy opens one big box and the inner case box of 4, boom. It reduces costs. It improves accuracy of not counting 1, 2, 3, 4, right? But a lot of our clients, before they meet us, it's one big giant box. They don't know how much. So we actually spend a lot of time with our client of optimizing the master case back. So not shipping more or less than they need to. And two, that it also it maximizes the efficiency of the retailer. Right? Again, we talked about the first point, making the buyer shop easier. Having the master case pack already predetermined, as well as your inner case pack, will save both time, effort, and money both for you, as well as the retailer. As for the retail box, you need a four-color retail box that tells a story, that has maybe some icons, because you literally have 2 to 3 seconds when someone's walking by the shelf to grab their attention if you don't have a display out there, especially if English is not your first language. And two, some of our clients, as I said before, are first to market. It's something that's totally brand new. You only put so much copy till you overdo it. So a lot of our clients are adding QR codes to the front of the box. Why the front of the box versus the back of the box or side of the box? Because we as manufacturers have no control how the box is displayed. Yeah, we want a face like this, but maybe in reality, maybe it's turned backwards. Maybe it's on the side. Maybe it's upside down, right? But having the QR code on the front, that if it's visible or it's locked up in a glass case, easy for someone to take their iPhone or phone itself and get more information about the product before they ask the associate to unlock the glass case to buy the product.
So, I mean, in a perfect world, we follow all these 5 steps and we succeed, we're growing, we're optimizing along the way in our relationship with our retailer. Hypothetically, though, it doesn't go our way. How do you help your clients overcome rejection and prepare to get back on your feet and hopefully hit a home run with your next pursuit?
So generally speaking, right, you'll get 9 no's and 1 yes, right? That's what we've heard in sales. We work with over 150 retailers across the US and Canada. We have the largest retail shamans in North America. So if a retailer, one of our clients says, is it best buy, says no, that's fine. We'll talk to Target. We'll talk to QVC. We'll talk to Apple, right? So for our clients, when there's a no or no, I'm not ready yet, that's fine. We have a plethora of the retail or verticals to go after. For brands that don't use retail bound for whatever reason, right? If the retailer says no, not now, it's not the end of the world for a couple of reasons. In a day, buying is more subjective than objective, meaning that buyer that didn't like your product today, wait 12 months to 18 months, that buyer may be gone. He may get promoted. He may leave. So, and the new buyers come in and say, God, I love your product. Where have you been all my life? So I tell our client, if by chance the buyer says no, we have other retailers to pursue. But again, in a year or 18 months, that buyer that said no may be gone. And we have another chance to present again to that retail, as long as we don't burn any bridges along the way.
Right. That's cool. You know, we heard a similar refrain from one of our other guests. Natalie came on and she said, no's can be not right now's. And it's a helpful piece of advice to keep in the back of your mind to not get discouraged for sure.
Yeah. Last year at CES 2024, we moved with Apple. One of our clients, the product was much superior than what they had in their store and website. And everybody said, I like the product. However, so it wasn't a no, but I said, hey, however, can you do X, Y, and Z? 11 months later, we have a prototype to show Apple, and now we're in discussions with Apple and getting to stores later in 2025.
Awesome. It's all data to work with. That's great. Well, all right. I know we're coming up on time here, so I just want to ask you, what's next for you in Retail Bound in the coming months, and what are you looking forward to in 2025?
For us as a company, we launched a new service called Retail Bound Accelerator. It's basically, it's like almost like a group format of 8 to 10 startups per class that are kind of learning in the trenches with us. We kind of say we take 18 years of industry experience and create an 8-week intensive boot camp, helping brands get ready for retail, like go-market strategy, pricing, logistics, packaging, marketing. And after the 8-week course, we'll actually introduce them to about 3 distributors from the pitch their product to, by the way. So it's a new product.
Oh, that's great.
We're actually taking admissions right now as we speak, and hopefully have our first class start in April of 2025.
Awesome. That's a really great opportunity for entrepreneurs. Where can they find you? Where can we look you up online?
It's retailbound.com. That's where you can find us. If you're on LinkedIn, look me up. Johan Jacob, love to connect. Hopefully we can find a way to do business with you in the future.
Thank you so much, Johan. This has been really helpful advice for our entrepreneurs.
Thank you for the time, by the way.
My pleasure. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you.
B2B Breakthrough is produced by Alibaba.com. To find out how Alibaba.com is empowering its customers with the tools, services, and resources they need to grow their business, visit Alibaba.com. And then make sure to search for B2B Breakthrough on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Make sure to follow us so you don't miss future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Alibaba.com, thanks for listening.